it's coming, you know, you can relax because it's picking it up, I think, pretty well. But if we could start, if you could just for the sake of the tape, state your name, your full name, and then maybe where and when you were born.
My name is Philip Edmund Bazemore. Currently in Monroe in Union County, I'm referred to as P.E. or Phil. Seldom do you hear one call me Philip. I can recall after I came here, and I'll go back a little bit later in a minute, but I was in had been in Union County, I guess, about 10 years. And I went, I'm a native of Bertie County, Windsor. And I went back, and a little boy about 10 years old, appeared to be about 10. And he came up behind me and said, "Hey, Phil." And in Union County, I refused to tell anybody my first name. I gave my initials. And for him to say that, he just caught me real quick, but it was interesting. Now, back to my birth. I was born in Bertie County, rural county, April 11th, 1921. Went to elementary school that I guess you call one of the Rosenwald schools, St. Paul, finished there. I went to, after I finished elementary school, I went to Windsor, Davis Etheridge High School for a short span of time, and somehow it wasn't working, and my mother in some way had learned of W.S. Creasy High in Northampton County. And my had one daughter was already there, so that's where I went. I graduated from high school at W.S. Creasy High in Rich Square. Following that, I went back home on the farm with the intention of being a farmer. A farm during the crop production season. And then during the late July, August, and early September, when we didn't have a lot of work to do in the field, we would go into pulpwood and cut pulpwood. And of course, we used a cross-cut saw. And we don't have all the niceties that you have today. When we cut pulpwood with the cross-cut saw, it means that you had to bend down and pick that pulpwood up and put it on the truck to haul it out. And I started doing that around 16 years of age. So I realized that that was something that I didn't really want to do, but it was a necessity to get ahead if we want to get ahead. But I'm talking in circles. Been that far long ago why you have to talk in circles, because, before I graduated at W.S. Creasy High School, while I was a student there, I played sports, football and basketball. And to my pleasant surprise, I earned a medal in basketball. And I cheated a little bit in football. My senior year, I was granted permission to do something that I don't think is allowed today. But I went to school about 3 weeks, a little better than 3 weeks of the first semester of my senior year. Didn't give me an opportunity to play sport football, but that's the amount of time I had my senior year in high school to graduate, because that was the first semester. And the principal and the teachers all agreed that if I did the work, they'll let me go by. They wouldn't hold me responsible for anything. And I passed, because, you know, school was 8 months in that now. I passed all of the exams except geometry. Mm-hmm. And you can't learn that much geometry in that span of time. But I passed all of the other tests, and I can remember one our coach and civic teacher was telling the class that he thought he was at fault, that too many students were not making the grades that they should have on his exam. And then I reached Uncle Phil's paper, and he referred to me as Uncle Phil. Of course, I moved slow. But I played basketball, played football. But that's what a nickname that he gave me. And said, Uncle Phil came here just a few days and he passed. And he said, now why didn't the rest of you make almost perfect scores? Right. But that was a part. But then what happened, I told him, I made it clear that I was cheated out of my last year of football.
Right.
And so
you weren't allowed to play.
I wasn't there. See,
right.
Rich Square, and then I lived in Bertie County, so I didn't do it. So I was allowed to do a little classwork and play, even though I had graduated, had my diploma, and play for 3 games the year after I graduated.
Okay.
And so I got my time in.
Uh-huh.
But after graduating from high school, I wanted to join the Air Force and volunteered, but didn't meet the qualification. That geometry that I missed kept me out of the Air Force. I didn't qualify there. That plus one other thing, I had keloid in the back of my neck. And with those keloids, they were larger then than they are now. That disqualified me for the Army. And I was drafted, and of course, I did not pass. And but it was because of the keloid. They said I could not wear a helmet. So after 7 years, I decided that the farm life and the pubwood life was not the life I wanted to make. And I decided that I would go to college. And a teacher, elementary teacher in Bertie County, was talking to me, and she asked me, where did I plan to go? And I told her, going to Hampton Institute. It's Hampton University now in Virginia. And she looked at me and said, Philip, you don't have brains enough to go to Hampton. And that irritated me a little bit. The two people that I admired most were Hampton graduates. And both of them had served as cooperative extension agents in Bertie County. And I enrolled. I applied for Hampton. Didn't even apply for any other college. Mm-hmm. Most of the students in Bertie County was going to A&T State University now, or Elizabeth City. But Hampton accepted me. And obviously, I graduated, and but not having military training and going to a private institution, and Hampton didn't give out scholarship unless you were an outstanding student, and I was not an outstanding student. They didn't give athletic scholarships then, so I didn't bother to play in a sport.
A little bit older student as well, right?
I was a little older than most. But see, there was a lot of veteran there. So there was another fellow there, a veteran, Alfred Bailey. And he and I were, I believe, the oldest two in the class. Mm-hmm. Everybody else was younger than we were.
Right.
But most of the men were veterans, and that they would not have been there had it not been for that. But I was there for 4 years. I graduated in 4 years. There were times that I worked 20 hours a week was common, but there were times that I worked as much as 40 hours a week to be able to stay there.
Sure. What kind of work were you doing?
I always tell people that, you know, it sounds good. I said I milk cows. We had Hampton had a dairy farm, and I milk cows. And I don't say it necessarily boastfully, but I was good.
Yeah.
There was a friend of mine, Owens. He was a veteran, but he's a native of Wilmington area. And he and I, we were classmates. We were very good friends. And we never said that we were racing to see who would finish his line first.
Right.
But we never milked unless we did race.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and if one had problem with the machine or with anything, we would look at the other and say, "What's wrong, fella?" And but see, it sounded good to say you're milking cows, but when you're in a dairy working like that, you fed the cows, you wash the cows, you milk the cows, and you clean up after the cows.
Mm-hmm.
So you so, but you don't.
You just leave the milk.
I just put milk in there, and if a person doesn't know all the details, they think, well, he just milked cows. But no, I did a lot more than that. But I think there, the experience I had there, one of the ag teachers told me that you will learn to milk a cow by hand if you pass this course. Well, no one could believe that I was a farm boy all of my life and never milked a cow at home.
You didn't have any dairy.
Yeah, but somebody milked the cow that was other than the family. We had our chores, and mine was never to milk.
Okay.
And I never milked a cow before I went to college. But when I went to college, I learned fast.
Was the farm in the town of Windsor, or was it out in the country?
It was out. We were tenants and farm owners about 10 to 12 miles out from Windsor.
Okay. But staying in the same place as tenants, or did you move a bit?
No, as we moved a little bit. From the time I started school, we were living in one location as a tenant. Now, my dad's family owned some land, but we left there because it wasn't enough land because we had a large family. And we moved in another area, the wooded section of the county. And we stayed there until we bought a farm in that same area.
Okay.
And then I lived on a farm that we bought, and we still own that farm.
Okay.
It's 218 acres, something like that, but we still own that farm.
Now, does your family go back in the county for, you know, how many generations back? Was it your father that would have moved there, or
Well, I put it this way. When I was in college at Hampton, I went to Norfolk, and I saw a sign on a little store that said Baysmore, and I went in there. And the fella asked me, it was a blonde-headed fella there, and he asked me, he said, "Could I help you?" I said, "Well, not necessarily." I said, "I just saw the sign Baysmore, and I came in here." I told him I was a student. And he told me something then that I guess I have repeated 1,000 times. He said, "Every Baysmore alive is a native of Bertie County. Every
right?
Baysmore in the country originated in Bertie County." And I did not believe him then. I mean, he would look to be probably about 60, 65. And I was a young college student. I mean, I didn't think he knew what he was talking about. But he did. And after I graduated from college, whenever I went to a city, including Hawaii, I looked in the telephone directory. I get back to answering your question a minute from them. I would look in the telephone directory and pull out the name Baysmore and just dial one. And in Hawaii, I can remember so vividly, Hawaii and Houston, and then between Savannah and Hilton Head Island. There's a place in there that I stopped and called. Those are the three that I can remember most. I also remember in Chicago, there were no Abaysmores in Chicago. I was there to the market there, but I didn't see any Abaysmores in the telephone director. But let's go back to this looking for Abaysmores than a telephone director. When I was in Hawaii on vacation, I called and I got a fairly young fellow, young voice, appeared to be a young voice. And this was the only black voice that I called in all of my calling. Everybody else were white, but this was a black person. He said, no, he wasn't from Beatty County. Said he himself was from New York. And he said, my family are from Orlando. And I said, and he was thinking about Orlando, Florida.
Right.
I said, not Orlando. I said, Orlando. He said, where is that? I said, that's in Beatty County. And we laughed. I think we talked for 30 more minutes.
Yeah.
But when I first caught him, he talked slow because I think he was under the impression that I was looking for a handout.
Right.
But when he learned that I was there on vacation, that the conversation was real nice.
Right.
But in Houston, I was working then as they were there with the League of Municipalities. I called and I got sounded though an elderly white female, and when I called, before I could say what I wanted, she hung up. And I didn't blame her, because there was a lot of problem that way, and she thought possibly that I was trying to do her some harm.
Sure.
But the one that really fascinates me, again, is the one that between Savannah, Georgia, and Hilton Head Island in South Carolina. I stopped and called, looked in the phone book and called. And I called and I've got a white female who married a Abaysmore. And I told her what I've been done. Oh, she said, that's interesting. I said, I've called and see where are you from. She said, we are from Georgia. I said, yeah, you're from Georgia, but how did you get to Georgia? She said, my husband said they've always been in Georgia. I said, no, you haven't always been in a place. I said, how did he get to Georgia? And she said, all she ever heard was his family been in Georgia ever since. I said, what happened? I said, the name Abaysmore originated in Beatty County. And back off a little bit on that, Bill Lewis, Dr. Lewis at NC State sent me a clipping out of the News and Observer then, and it showed how that name was put together. But I lost that, and I looked for it for ages, and I can't find it. But it was in the Raleigh News and Observer, and it was, but the name was original. That's where the name started. But anyway, when I told her about my mission, and I told her that, do you want to know how your husband happened to, his family happened to get to Georgia? She said, yeah. I said, now I can only relate to you as a Dutchman told me. I said, I think he was right. She said, what's that? I said, when the settlers were in the Carolinas, in North Carolina, I said, really in Beatty County, that group, I said, there was some, the Indian had cleared some farmland, and it was very productive, so they drove the Indian out of Beatty County, out of that eastern part of North Carolina, and drove them into Georgia. And she said, well, what happened after that? I said, they went to Georgia and cleared more land. They had good farmland. The settlers followed them to Georgia. I said, now this is what the Dutchman told me. And they cleared land, but the settlers ran them out of Georgia. And he said, and where did they go? I said, Oklahoma. And she said, what happened at Oklahoma? I said, I think, I said, now the first two statements I told you, The Dutchman was pretty emphatic. These were true. I said, but the third one about Oklahoma, I'll have some reservation, because when it got to that one, he would laugh before he said it and then laugh afterward. I said, but what he said was that they drove the Indian out of Georgia into Oklahoma, and there they discovered oil. And she said, and then what? And I said, and then they told everybody to go to hell. And she died laughing. She said, please come by. I want you to meet my husband. But I didn't have time. I wanted to sit down and talk with them.
How long ago did you talk to them?
I talked with her about 30 or 40 minutes.
Yeah. But and they were in, what, Hardingdale or Beaufort? Or
I don't recall that.
One of the little
Hilton
Head. There's not much there.
Not much. It was a small village. But right. I just looked in the phone, picked up a baseball, and called.
Right.
But that was really interesting. And she was just dying for me to come by to see them.
Yeah.
And I wanted to. Obviously, she knew that I was a black man.
Uh-huh.
And obviously, she knew that I knew she was white. But it was just the interest there. And every time I would call somebody and start talking, that was the kind of interest it would generate.
Right.
And so that's what happened. Now, let's go back a little bit there to... I graduated from back to college by running around, but graduated in 1951, and I was employed by the Cooperative Extension Service, Agricultural Extension Service then, in Edgecombe County, September the 1st, I believe, 1950. I graduated in 51. I was employed by the Edgecombe County in September 1951. Mm-hmm. And worked in Edgecombe County as assistant agent, assistant Negro County agent, what it was then. And I was promoted to the position of Negro County agent. That's when to Union County. And I learned then that the Ari Jones, who was at headquarters at A&T State University, had told some of the other agent that he had planned to send me to Mecklenburg County.
Mm-hmm.
But when this county became available, he told me I can go if I wanted, but if I didn't want to come to Union County, it would not interfere with my promotion to another county once it became available. I had no idea that he had this in mind, but I said, I'll take it. And he said, this is the challenge. Said, you got to, things are not quite what you might want them to be. I said, doesn't matter, we'll do it.
Mm-hmm. What year was that?
54. I worked in Edgecombe from September 1st, 1951, until September the 15th, 54. And I started in Union County September the 16th, 54, and retired September the 30th of 81. But while in Union County, when I came here, the position as Negro County agent was the lowest salary-wise of all the Negro agents in this district. I accepted that.
Why would this have been the lowest?
I don't have the answer there. I think my predecessor was not given what he married or what. I don't know. I don't know the answer, but his salary was lowest. But in about 9 years, from 54 until about 62 or 3, it had moved from the lowest to the highest. And it wasn't that much that I did, because I did everything that I could. But the wonderful people that we have here to work with,
mm-hmm.
and they were so supportive and cooperated so nicely that there are things were happening that impressed the decision makers.
Okay.
And on that basis, they just kept increasing my salary, county and state and whatnot. But that lasted until, I mean, I was never really, well, let's go back. When they moved me, kept continued to promote me, increase my salary up to that level, then we went to the point of integration. Mm-hmm. Now, that was the damnedest period of my life. I mean, I'm serious. That was... As a black man, I had suffered humiliation and discrimination and all of those negative that you can think about. But during the period of integration, in my opinion, was the worst time of my life. And I was working here as a Negro County agent at that time. I was chair of what we had then, the Negro County Agent Association at the state level. And historically, the chair of that organization, once he served his term, seemingly, with possibly one exception, he caught hell. I mean, the people on the state level, that's chastising. If he was a progressive, he paid a price. And I was mildly progressive, I think, and so. But I paid a price in that a lot of the most of the southern states agreed to drop their association and become members of the white association. That's what North Carolina Agricultural Agent Association wanted. But as chairman of the our association and other members on the executive committee, we said no. We will merge, but we will not drop ours. We will merge the two. If I have 20 years now, I would carry that 20 years over. We would be guaranteed some spots in the decision-making process on the board. And that held us up, and it was, we were told that that would not happen. But then all of us were told that we would have one organization or none by the state administration. George Hyde, Dr. Hyde, was the director there. He said, you would... actually, it ended up, this started back in about 64-5, and that's when things was really, really difficult. Yeah. And but we refused, and we just, as chairman of the group, you know, and it's still that way. The chair of that group is the one that's criticized most. Sure. Because if the chair gives in, then others would probably fall. But I then just said no. I put a word in front of the no. And I won't call mention that word now. But,
how do you the historical record?
But I just said, it cannot happen. I said, we aren't going to do that. I said, we'll be better off without an organization if we're going to take black people ready to retire to come in as new agents in another association. I said, no.
They would lose their seniority.
Professionally, no. I mean, so far as the employment.
But within
the association, they would lose all their seniority. And it's my understanding that the other southern states accepted that to some extent, a large extent, because during the first, maybe 65, around 65 in that time, we had North Carolina, the black agent in North Carolina, received as many distinguished service awards. For a while, we received as many distinguished service awards, this is national, as all the other southern states combined. And that because, obviously, they went in without carrying the seniority. So you had to have seniority to qualify. And we went in with seniority. I can recall very vividly also attending an association meeting. that the agents in Alabama somehow was discouraged from associating with us. Now, they did, but when there were other agents around white, they just nicely walked away, and they weren't associated with agents from North Carolina. And I was told during that time that I was the most hated black person in North Carolina. That didn't change anything. I think I was one of the more respected black person in North Carolina, because the people who said that others hated me, I was under the impression, and I still am, that they had a considerable amount of respect for me. And I live with it that way. Yeah. But it was no way that I could vote to yield to anything but equality. Mm-hmm. And the thing that probably has as much of an impact on me, it wasn't difficult. It wasn't a difficult decision to make. It was an automatic decision. But it was hard for me to convey my decision. A friend of mine, Riddick, he used to be a Negro county agent in Richmond County, but he was at NC State then doing graduate work, and he later went to Washington, D.C., the Department of Agriculture. It was M.E. Riddick, I believe. But anyway, he had been gone a long time. And he came one Sunday while he was in NC State in graduate school. He came by to see me. We were good friends. And he said, Bazemore, I was told, and he was, these were some of the movers and shakers at NC State, that you would be the first black county chairman if you don't get involved in this civil rights mess. And he said, when he said civil rights mess, it automatically meant that he was bringing a message, and I didn't respond. So he and I, we talked about other things. So he said, well, I got to go, I guess. And I said, have you decided what your decision would be? I said, my decision, what has always been? He said, what that? I said, if I don't get involved in this civil rights mess, I said, it's going to be difficult for me, but I would have to shave every morning with my eyes closed, because I wouldn't be able to look at the face that I was shaving. And he said, Bazemore, you giving up that opportunity? I said, I'm not giving up anything. I'm doing what I think is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I said, so he said, well, that's the message I'm to take back. I said, if you take anything back, you take that back. And so I never, they never promoted me to that point. And quite obviously, which means that today, I'll go back to some of the other thing that happened later. But today, my retirement income was probably about $2,000 to $3,000 a year less than what it would have been if I had been a good boy and was promoted to county extension chair. But then back to that time, moving up through that, when we, the Negro County Agent Association, during that struggle of merging, you had my term expired, and we had an election. And one fella, L.C. Cooper's in Warren County, and he is still alive. I don't know if he recalled making a statement, but he made a statement there to our group. He said, our organization isn't going to last but so long. We're going to have one organization. And he said, being chairman of the organization is pure hell. He said, there's nobody in here that has nerve enough or is crazy enough to be chair other than Phil Baden, so you better leave him there. And so nobody would accept it. He was the vice chair, and he was supposed to move up. But nobody would accept it. So I served as chair of our association, to my knowledge, longer than anybody else, because it was at that point. But once that happened, back in the 60s, late 60s, before I was elected, a fellow, Fletcher Lassiter, who still lives in Winton now, he went from Winton to Edenton, Shawan County, and then he got out of the Corps of Extension Service. But he was chair of our association, and I was promoted vice chair. And when he left, of course, I went on to chair. And that's how I reached chair ahead of schedule, and I stayed there until we resolved or dissolved our association. But during that time, there were seemingly everybody was looking for ways to terminate my appointment. And if I had an ounce of intelligence, I would have responded different. But obviously, I didn't have any intelligence because I did what I thought was the right thing to do, and my appointment wasn't terminated. But it was pretty obvious that the late chair here, Jim Marsh, was the chairman here. It was pretty obvious that he or somebody was trying to fire me, get me fired, because Ed Fall was assistant state agent, and I can't think of the person now who was a district agent, came here to Monroe and to have a conference with me and the chair. And they were talking, and see, the assistant to the district agent, had a bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. The assistant to the district agent had a PhD degree, but he was black.
Right.
And H.M. McNeil, the late H.M. McNeil, then. But the word went out, somebody said, I don't know who, that I said that, I'm trying to think of the district agent name now, that he couldn't supervise me. I never made a statement like that, but that came out, they mentioned that in that conference.
Yeah.
And I didn't respond. I just continued to talk, and they talked. And the district, I'll just think of his name sooner or later, but he brought it up again. Then I stopped. I got a little bit teed off, as I sometimes do. And I said, number one, I said, I never said that. And I said, I don't care who told you that, told a damn lie, and they knew they were telling a damn lie when they told you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next week, the chair here was demoted to agriculture agent, and somebody else was promoted in his place. Because that's what I know, that when I said that, I'm saying that he was the one who was trying to fire me.
Right.
But the time that I embarrassed myself the most is when we had pretty much put the association together, not totally. We still had a lot of stuff to work out. We were still meeting, and they were still meeting separately, but sometimes we were meeting together.
This is through the 70s.
Yeah. This was in the late 60s. We're still in the late 60s.
Okay.
And we had, this is before the 70s, we had a meeting in Boone, Appalachian State University now. And a fella from Alamance County, I'm pretty certain that's where he was from, but we had all of us there, black and white, in the association meeting. Room full, I guess, about 80% white, 20% black. And he stood up and he was talking about some of the things that we were doing, and he called my name once, it didn't bother me. Everything, in other words, I was a troublemaker. He called it again, and I started getting angry. And when he called the third time or something along that line, I no longer was angry, I was mad. And I stood up and told him, you're a damn liar. And I said, now, if you don't like that, you just meet me outside and we'll take care of the situation. And the chair was, everybody, it got so quiet, you couldn't hear, nobody was saying a word. Because at that point, I had lost my cool, and that later I was embarrassed. But with that whole setting, I made that statement, and I meant it. I mean, the Hattie walked out to there, and nobody stopped either one of us, I probably would have been a prisoner. Because I don't think, we were about the same size, and I don't think both of us would have walked out alive. We had no weapon, but I just think that I don't know what would have happened. And this is the thing that frightened me at that time. But anyway, the reason I said back to that same incident at Boone, that a lot, even though a lot of people was told me that I was hated, I detected that a lot of people respected me, because a lot of the white leadership came to me at the lunch break, mm-hmm. and said, we don't feel that way, we don't think that way. He was to some extent ostracized, and I was not. So it shows that the thinking of the agents, most of the agents in the leadership position in North Carolina, their minds and everything were moving in the right direction. And there were a lot of them that were downright honorable men, most of them. And to see how they gathered around me at the lunch break and how he was ostracized, it said a lot. And that to me said we was on the right trail. And then following that, we had another meeting on the East Coast down at Manny or someplace. And this is the one that was kind of the end of the whole thing. I had to leave early, a day ahead. I went there, and I had to leave a day ahead. But the then chairman of New Hanover and Wilmington saw me. Old Bazemore's leaving. He ain't no more fighting, so he won't stay. It was just a laugh.
Right.
So my point is that when obviously we had arrived,
right.
and we had problem here so far as getting the Distinguished Service Award. There were people on that committee in this district would not give it to me. I mean, you still that happened, but once that person got off the committee, bam, I was the first one to get it.
Yeah.
And so it was just, you always have one individual here, and
right.
you still do. But it turned out to be real good. So I continued there until I retired.
Mm-hmm.
But let's back up now a little bit to when the chairman tried to fire me. This is my opinion.
Yeah.
And he retired about a year after he met the qualification of a retirement. And Eugene Stacy was promoted chair. I probably would have been promoted chair, but I was a troublemaker. But now, I'll tell the world and two more that Gene Stacy was a gentleman. He was fair, he was honorable, and he was one of the better person that anybody could ever work with. He was an outstanding person. He passed last year, but Gene Stacy was a real honorable man, native of South Carolina, but he was a full man. Now, we had a tremendous amount of respect for each other. There was never any hostility between Gene and me.
Mm-hmm.
Fact, very little between Gene and anybody in the staff. You saw everybody in the staff wanted to succeed. Not just because it was the right thing to do, but somehow because they want to make Gene look good.
Right.
I mean, you had that kind of respect and admiration for the guy. But seemingly Raleigh never caught that. They never gave him the recognition that he deserved. I guess maybe that was the reason, because it's no question in my mind that he was a few years ahead of them, so far as justice and fairness is concerned. Right. Gene was just an unusual person. No, you got no favoritism, but your fairness was there. He was just solid. He was competent. He was knowledgeable, and he was just good. Mm-hmm. And it was a pleasure to work under. But when he retired, that's when all hell broke loose again. See, now I'm going back later and bringing back up on the suit now. Mm-hmm. But a fellow MC Howell was promoted. I had 20 plus years. MC Howell had 12 years of experience. I had had the experience of having administration before we merged. I was the Negro County agent, so the budget and all that stuff I did, but they promoted the 4-H-A's over me. And we went to the OEO or something, one of those civil rights organizations.
This would be about what year?
This was in 76. And but they promoted him over me, and I told then Paul Dew, who was the district agent, that if the opportunity ever presented itself that I could expose the hypocrisy and the racism in the corporate extension service, I said I wouldn't hesitate to do it. And I never changed from that, yeah, because I felt that that was a great need. But here was a man who had 12 years, 12, 13. I had 23 plus. I had administrative experience. He had more hours toward a master's degree, but neither of us had a master's degree. But he was promoted ahead of me, not because of one thing, is that I'm a black man and they were not going to promote me. But that happened, but the suit was already filed before then. See, we filed, going back now before the while, I was still, I was started saying SOB in the eyesight of a lot of people, but, and that, I think, the administration pretty much thought of me in that way. But I tipped my hat to Dr. making his hair go gray daily.
Right.
But he made some real negative statements about me, but he never, not once, as long as I was performing, he separated the two. So I had, he's deceased. I had to respect him for that.
Yeah.
He did that, and he did it. There were no love lost between us.
Sure.
But professionally, I never ceased to have great amount of respect for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if he were alive today, I think he would make a similar statement towards me. But my salary wouldn't have continued to move ahead if that were the case, because he had control over that. It didn't continue that way after he left now. When he left, Blaylock, Dr. Blaylock, replaced him. Blaylock's still alive. And the suit was filed 71, I believe, and then it would refile again in 72, but it was back in that when it started. And we stayed with that. But let me back up on the suit now. Let's talk about that suit.
Tell me a little bit about the suit.
What happened for, I guess, 7 or 8 years, quite a few years, we were meeting with the administration trying to get some justice on a negotiation across the table.
Right.
And we were of the impression that we would succeed. At one time, they had decided that they didn't make that decision was not made, but we were allowed to believe it had been made, that they made all the white chairmen, all the chairmen in the county, the white people, white male,
after the merging.
Yeah, that's right. No, this had nothing to do with our association. This was the official, the federal government.
Right.
You got you're going to have just one extension service in the county. Mm-hmm. But when it merged, and they made all of this was in probably the late 60s, 68, something like that, maybe a little earlier than that. They made all of the chairman white male.
Right.
And we had very few of them had master's degrees. We had some black Negro agent with master's degrees, but not one of them were made chair. And then let's fast forward, and then I back up to that.
Yeah.
While we were on trial at the suit, this is one of the reasons that Dr. Blaylock, I never had the respect for him that I had for Dr. Hyde. Now, a lot of the black agents did. Mm-hmm. Carlton Blaylock still lives. But on stand, on the oath, he said race had nothing to do with the promotion. I couldn't believe 100 counties, 100 white share, and not one of them black. Huh. But race was not a factor.
Isn't that a coincidence?
But to say that I had lost respect for him prior to that, we can back up now to about 7 to 8 along that time. After they made M.C. Howard chair, he was not the caliber of person that M.C. Howard still lives here. He was not the caliber of person that Gene Stacey was. 1 year on the budget, not one black person on the staff was recommended for a salary increase. And when I saw that, I responded. And he wrote a note that, I looking after all of the blacks? I'm looking after justice and fairness. And though he had Blaylock to come to the county, Blaylock came to the county, he saw nothing wrong. So that was to me, if George Hyde was the director, MC would not be the chair.
Right.
I mean, if he pulled something like that, I don't think George Hyde would have stood for it.
Mm-hmm.
But Blaylock not only stood for it, he endorsed. He wrote a letter endorsing that. And that was totally wrong. You can't have black and white on the staff that have been getting the promotion all the year, and then all of a sudden, the salary increases. All of a sudden, all the whites getting salary increases, the black getting none from the county level. So nothing happened. Blaylock endorsed that. And then when he made that statement in court, that just finished me off so far as my respect for him. I still see him, I smile and I shake hands, but I can never have the respect for him as I had for Hyde. And prior to that, I had greater respect for him than I did Hyde. But since then, I realized, I thought that he would have done more because Hyde was from the Midwest and Blaylock's a native of Wilson County. I thought if he had been the director, he would have done some things differently. Because at one time they were talking about making some of the black agents associate chair. And then when the chair retired, the automatic would be chair. They didn't just let associate stay there. But they changed their mind, they didn't do that. If they had done that, there wouldn't have been a suit. So the administration had many golden opportunities to avoid that suit. And that suit cost the state $2-3 million. I don't know how much more with the Cooperative Extension Service. But they could have avoided that. They had several opportunities to avoid that. If they had promoted 2 or 3 of the black agents, they didn't have to promote me because I'm going to still do my thing.
Yeah.
But Hernando Palmer in Johnson County was one that had his master's degree. He wasn't promoted because he was also vocal. But this is the kind of thing that caused the friction to discontinue to build up.
How do you explain there? I mean, It seems like in the long run, it would have just been in their interest to even let in a few, like, token hires. But they weren't even acting in their own self-interest.
That's
it. Was just...
They finally did. But my point is...
is there any other explanation than just a kind of blanket hatred or racism?
That's the only explanation you can give is racism. Yeah. We had the education, we had attainment, we had our performance, everything. There are specialists now. During that time, when we merged the organization, I had responsibility in agronomy and with the swine program. The swine program in Union County was the top of any county west of Raleigh, period. I mean, we were doing things. And the specialists at that time were Dave Spruill, Dr. David Spruill, who later went to Georgia, was in charge of the animal science department at the University of Georgia. And I went there, we were in Atlanta last year, and I went by to see him. But they never stopped putting me on top. The guys in agronomy, when we doing work in agronomy, they never stopped putting me on top. Because when they come to visit the county, when they said we'd like for somebody to put on this demonstration, or this is something we're trying to do some research in or some work in, they didn't hesitate to say, call on Phil Baseball. And I produced. The farmers here were just dull. I mean, yeah. they were so cooperative. And those people would do almost anything. I could go out there and said, look, we need to do this. Yeah. We don't know. We think this will work. And that was it. They said, how, where you want to select a place, what kind of area are you looking for, where do you want it located? And I would say, and that was it. That was the end. It would be there. So the agronomy field and the swine people kept me rated high because I was producing. And the specialists, when they wanted something done, in several areas of the state, they knew that they could get it done here because we would do it. Mm-hmm. And we had farmers here that was very cooperative. But you still had that problem that they would not promote us. Since that time, they start promoting some. But token promotion at that time would have been more effective than the promotion that they finally end up doing after the Supreme Court ruled against it. Because at that time, it wouldn't have required as many. See, if they had promoted three or four people that all of the black agents looked to and knew that they were performing, mm-hmm. then they would know, they would feel that, okay, if this is the case, all I have to do is perform, I can get there.
Right.
But they people that all of the black agents looked to and admired and respected by performance and all other ways, they were not being promoted. So you didn't have anything left. And when they saw the court ruling against them, then they changed and started promoting them.
Yeah.
And the Corporate Extension Service today, back up, I don't think it will ever come back to where it was.
Mm-hmm.
But that other reason, that is not the reason, but I think that has contributed some to it. But when we went in the suit, Judith Chambers' firm were the first one. Charles Beckton, Judge Beckton, now he's attorney Beckton. Well, I believe his office in Raleigh then. He put together the first suit.
Mm-hmm.
And then because Julius was on the educational board, the state board of education, one of those boards, he had to get out. His lawsuit could not have done. Had his lawsuit stayed there, it would not have gone that long. It would have been much shorter span of time. And in my opinion, something would have happened much sooner. But then he said his suit would have to drop it. And
what was the difference, though, in the suits? His was just much more direct?
Well, how would you describe it? I think with that firm there, they were pushing... I think I can may answer this better by saying this. When I was doing some graduate work, and I never did complete the graduate work or got into politics, but I got about 22 or 3 hours, or maybe about 23 or 4 hours at Appalachian State University. But one of the instructors there said that the chamber firm probably knew more about the civil rights laws and all the other firms in the state of North Carolina combined. And so, but Chamber then referred us to another firm, two white lawyers, and somehow they weren't together too long themselves, well, they separated. And then we had to move again, so we ended up with the firm that worked with us through until it was finished. But we moved by going from, when you change firm, you're going to lose a year or two in the process. And but the problem during that time, see, is keeping us together.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And that is a point that few people realize. I mean, few of us realize the effort that went into keeping us together. But at regular intervals, that I would send out communication, and the good part about it, sometimes we put some things in the communication that we want the administration to get, because some of us would always make certain that the administration got a copy of the letter. We knew that. We didn't know it at first, but when we learned that, we said, we can't let that stop us. And we're going to do it anyway, because we have no other way to communicate with our people. But back up again, before we got to the suit, this was probably in about 66, about 65 or something like that. We went to Washington, D.C., and Bill Seabrum, late Bill Seabrum, while the civil rights person, guru, with the Department of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. He worked with us. And this is the thing that if any of us, that all of us there were stupid. Because he said, fella, hold out your hand. And we held out our hand. I wonder what in the world he was talking about. Bill was blind. Uh-huh. He said, well, when you get back to Raleigh, your administration could say you hold out your hand, and he could tell you that you guys are fired. And he said, what for? I said, your skin's the wrong color. Because we were not covered by the civil rights law. The Cooperative Extension Service were not covered by the civil rights law. When that law passed, we were not covered. And but it was through his effort and through the effort that we put forth in this state.
Yeah.
That helped get the Corporate Extension Service covered.
Why weren't you covered under the initial?
When the House and Senate, when the bill was written under Johnson, it was something in there that did not include us. Now, I don't know what it was, but we were not included in that original bill.
Was it just Department of Agriculture employees?
I think it was the Cooperative Extension Service. I don't think it was.
For some reason, was exempted.
Was exempted from that. Because, see, I think it because that we were employed by the federal, state, and county government. We had three governments.
I see.
And this is my opinion. I have no knowledge as to what really was, but we were not covered. And he told us. And he said, you boys want to still go? You fellas want to still go through with this? And we said, we are here, and we don't intend to stop.
Yeah.
And you had Hernando Palmer, the late D.O. Ivey, Jim Wright. I'm trying to because now I was there. I think Fletcher, that was before Fletcher Lassiter retired. I'm not sure. But that's when it was hot. But Bill Seabrum is the guy that I think spearheaded that through the the House and Senate, mm-hmm. the people in charge of those bills that made certain that we were covered. Yeah. But we were not covered in that original bill. And we knew this. I'm not sure that Raleigh knew it. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they knew, but we knew it. We were told because we were there. But the whole time soon after we started the legal part of that, it was time for me to retire. And because in 76, I was overlooked for promotion, not overlooked, I was denied promotion. Overlooked is a nice word. I retired as soon as I got 30 years. My plan was to retire 3 years later. And that's what I had planned to work 3 years later. But I just didn't have it in me because I no longer enjoyed the work. I enjoyed the people, but I no longer enjoyed being in the office.
Well, I was wondering about that. How did this constant pressure, how did that affect your work as an agent?
It took more out of me, but the people in the county was so understanding, and that it made my work, I worked with them just as easy. I mean, it never impacted my work in the county. We was in the suit. But I got a phone call. This is back up a little bit. While we were in that suit, while we were just starting real good, I had about 14 acres of corn. 14 acres of corn, big lot of corn. But I would get somebody to plant it for me and all that. And I would have a little tractor. I'd prepare the land and somebody would plant it for me and all that kind of stuff. But that year it was dry at planting time. You put chemical down and the chemical did not work early enough because the corn came up, but so did some morning glories. And then when it rained, it prevented the other grass and stuff from coming up, but the morning glory was there. So when we got rid of the harvest corn, it wasn't a good crop because it was dry, fairly dry that year. This was done in the southeast part of the county. A fella from Statesville had a plane, and he would come over here and put chemical on it, kill the morning glory so that we could harvest the corn. I'm in Raleigh in the court, and because I had just retired then, but I was in court in Raleigh, and there were no black people in that area that had that, so all of the people down there that were working around me were white. So they got, I called one of them and told them, they called me and said, did I want mine sprayed? I said, yeah. They had the fella to spray my corn. About 15 acres or whatever it was. And I was in Raleigh. Yeah. And they told the guy with the airplane why I was not there. Yeah. And they gave me 100% justification for what I was doing. And these are white farmers. And he called me, still while I was in Raleigh in the suit, and for his money. I said, I was waiting for a bill. And he said, well, I said, how much is it? Let me know what it is. I send you a check. He told me what it was. I said, well, I'll just go ahead and send you a check, but you still send the bill. And he said, I said, how you want to make it out? He told me, I said, okay, I'll put it in the mail today. He didn't want to hang up. He said, I want to tell you something. He said, I got to tell you this. I said, what? He said, it doesn't make a bit of sense to put roses on a person's grave when he's dead. He can't smell them. I wonder what in the world he's getting around to. I said, no, you're right. He said, but I had an experience when I sprayed your corn that I've never had in my life and I never thought I would. I said, what was that? He said, all the people around there were white. There was not a black person there. And they told me where you were and what you were doing. And every one of them supported what you were doing. He said it was justification. He said, I never thought I would ever hear that in my life. And he said, I thought you need to know this. And but I knew those guys. I mean, we got along good together. I mean, all over the county. I know one person down there. Back up a little bit. He was building the Hulk House under my leadership. And I went down there, and they weren't pouring the foundation right. And I kept boots in my car, old shoes, and I was kind of rushed, but I got out and I said, we're going to do this thing right. He was gone, but he left his son and son-in-law there. And I got out there in the hot sun, and we put that thing down right. And we did it right. Nobody taught me how to pour concrete, but I just did it anyway. And he told, I think, everybody and his brother what I did. And he said, now, other way, didn't say call him, I won't be coming out there to do it. But if he's there and the see it's going on, he's going to make certain, said I would make certain it was done right. And that was one of the things that Dr. Spruill said that he had given me credit for. He said, if a guy come up and put up something fancy, if it wasn't right, and I would tell him without any hesitation, you got to take it down. Mm-hmm. And they would do it and put it back right. So my point is, we never stopped working. It was difficult. But my retirement was 3 years ahead of time because my time in the office was so stressful. It was just too stressful. Mm-hmm. And the field never was stressful. It was relaxing. Too often, for most of the time, I would go to the office 20, 30 minutes before anybody else, do what I had to do there, and be gone, spend the day mostly in the field. And that's how I survived. But when the time for retirement, I didn't hesitate to retire. And to go back to Dave Spruill, I retired September 30th, 81. Dave Spruill was head of the department at the University of Georgia, and he came to my retirement. So my point is, I don't know if that is, he may have done that for others, one other person, a white fellow, he probably would have done it too. Mm-hmm. But that's about the only one he would have done it for.
Right.
And so that's, after September the 30th, when I retired, before retirement, everybody knew that I was retired. George Miller, principal, elementary principal here in Union County, and I met courthouse there and this city hall, we met between the two, and we stopped talking, and we decided that we should organize an effort to support N.H. Mann for his reelection. N.H. Mann had been appointed, and he had been elected for one term, and we thought he was going to run again, and he hadn't said he was not.
Yeah.
And so that's when we organized some people and black people in Monroe to support him financially and otherwise. But before we got to that point, Mann told us he wasn't going to run.
This is running for
City Council.
For City Council. Mm-hmm.
And when he said he would not run for City Council, then that same group, it was decided that we should select somebody to run. There were three people considered. George Miller, retired principal now, but his schedule was there. John Crowder was working that belt, and I was with the Corporate Extension Service, but I was getting ready to retire, so decided that I would be the person. And I ran and was elected. And, of course, I've been reelected ever since.
Tell me, how many members on the council?
Six council members and the mayor, a total of seven.
So the mayor's the tiebreaker?
No, anybody. Everybody breaks. I mean, the mayor votes.
So the mayor's, okay, so this is a working
council. Yeah, the mayor votes.
So six members. How many black members?
Two. There are two of them.
And when you were 81?
I was the NH man with the only black before me.
I see.
Then I was the second black elected.
Now, do you know when the first black member was elected?
His... his first black member was elected. Now, he was appointed before, but he was elected 4 years before 81. That would be what, 87? I mean, 77. 77. So he was appointed probably around 75.
But before that, Monroe was all white.
All white. And we have now, and I said, get on the tallest building in the country and said, we have, in my opinion, one of the better council in the country. I mean, we work together as a team. It is nobody has an ego problem. Nobody has an personal agenda. You're looking at the best interests of the city. And that's what we do. Now you can ask me a question.
Let me go back. There's any number of topics that you've touched on that we could get into. But one, just a real kind of basic thing, is I was wondering if you could give me a sense for what the structure of the extension was. Say, when you started in 51, was there... So, you know, obviously there were a black and white agent, and then there is a black and white assistant in each county, or were there more employees than that?
There was black agents. There were white agents in 100 counties. There were black agents when I came in about 45 counties. And the county where we had a heavy black population. And in some of those counties, they had a black assistant agent. Mm-hmm. And I was the start as an assistant agent.
Depending on the number.
That's right, the population there. And
for instance, Edgecombe County, tell me a little bit about the work of the agent.
In Edgecombe,
what would you be doing?
My work in Edgecombe County was 100% with the 4-H Club program. I worked with the boys and girls and the various crops and the livestock, but also in organization and things of that nature, and really getting them motivated and to move ahead. Some of them, probably, in my opinion, ended up going to college who would not have gone had we not been there and working with them and working with their families. Mm-hmm. So even though I did some work agriculturally, but it was connected with the 4-H Club program. And only if there was a farmer out there with livestock, field crops, and this boy was there also, so regards to what the educational need that farmer had, we would provide it. But my sole responsibility was with the 4-H Club. Mm-hmm.
And was that because you were the assistant?
That's right.
Okay, so assistant worked with the kids
most of the time.
But the agent then was spending more time with the farmer.
Right.
And how strict, I'm imagining it's pretty strict, that the white agent would never or maybe seldom work with black farmers, and that the black agent would probably never work with white farmers. Was that?
That was pretty much so. And Edgecombe County.
Yeah.
It was a show for a long time in Union County. But I started working with some white farmers long before the federal and state said do it.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, they would call on me, they saw what I was doing, they'd call on me, and I would respond.
Right.
And so it was just one of the things that happened.
Yeah.
And I went out of the county before the civil rights thing passed, civil rights laws passed. I went out of the county with some white farmers to buy breeding stock. And so my point is, there were some I worked with, and when they merged and I had that responsibility, it was an automatic.
Right. Was that a problem then? Were there territorial issues, say, for the white agent, if you were at times working with white farmers?
Well, I didn't.
Did you feel threatened at all?
No, because he had a level of competency that was no problem.
Okay.
I mean, if you only felt challenged, in my opinion, if you were incompetent. If you are competent, you don't worry about what somebody else does.
Right.
You wouldn't want somebody to come out there and screw up what you've been doing. But as long as you're carrying out, promoting or perpetuating that's in place, I never no problem.
Now in Edgecombe, were you working out of the same office? Was there a building that you would work to in the morning?
Yeah, we were working. The black agent was in the basement and the white agent on the first floor. And then when we came, but now that was an improvement on what it was when I came here.
What was it?
We were on the second floor of a building, actually at the corner of Franklin and Church Street, where that building was, but it's no longer there in that order. But we had one stove in there, heater, close to that, related to that potbelly stove. But that's what we had to keep warm in. We did not have an air condition, but the white agent had the agriculture building. And they had the comfort, and we didn't. We had to go up some steps that bam, 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 made a lot of noise, and it just wasn't conducive to anything, but we accepted that and went ahead.
When did they get rid of the separate buildings? Was that the mid-60s?
Yeah, but the late 60s, when they merged office. Because now, what happened, this is the thing that I like about Union County, one of the other thing. That building we were in was hectic. So the old Belt property here, they had a small house in the back of it. Nice, warm, comfortable house, where the maid house, and the big Belt house is still standing there, beauty. But the county fixed that up so we'd have office there. And that was as comfortable as any other place. Yeah. We didn't have air conditioning, but it was comfortable. That was, in the early 60s. So we were around there about 4 or 5 years before we merged. When we merged, then everybody came to the agriculture building.
Now, when you came to Union County, how many employees would there have been of the cooperative service?
We had 1, 2, 3... You had about 4 or 5 white and one black.
Okay.
And that one black, the 4 or 5 white covers the various areas of agriculture.
I see. And specialty.
Yeah, sir. And the one black covered all the areas.
Yeah. What about a woman?
The women we had one female. They did the home economic work. Okay. The white had two. I know it was two. I don't think they only had two at that time, but black had one.
So you did have a woman that
yeah.
you worked with.
Mm-hmm. But, that's right.
Okay. And did every county have at least one white woman, and then about half the counties have a black woman?
Yeah, every county had a white woman.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But about half the counties had black.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the black population.
So as the agent, so you're covering all the areas, but in Union County, what does that mean you spend most of your time with? Is it livestock? Is it cotton?
It's no way that, I doubt if I could have given you that answer a month following the previous month. You asked me that question a month earlier, I couldn't have answered that question because you were doing some of everything all the time.
Right.
There was never a day that you spent on any one thing. There was never a day that every day that you were out there, you did some work in agriculture, you did some work in livestock, and we did a little work in poultry.
Yeah.
But you had to do it because that's how they got the hip.
Yeah.
And so they could not get, it was impossible for me to be as competent an agronomist as a white agent, because that was his specialty.
That's all he had to know.
That's right. It was impossible for me to be as competent in the swine and so livestock as the white agent. So my point is that you work night and day to do the best you could do,
mm-hmm.
but it's one of the reasons today that the black farmer is having a greater difficulty, because he didn't get the same level of help. There was no way that we could provide the same professional level of help
right.
as the white counterpart,
right.
because we covered a wide range of subjects,
yeah.
and the competency just wasn't there. Now, yes, we were
nothing of the bank loans.
That's it.
Resources.
And the other way, we could not when. For one example, the late Charlotte Sampson used to be both. He served on county commission once, but I was working then with everybody. That's after the civil rights we merged. He used to say that before Bazemo started working with me, he said, I used to buy a piece of equipment, then get a loan. I'd go to the bank, sit down, and sweat. So, but after he started working with me and got my hog and everything going, saying I can call the deal and tell them I want a tractor, and they say they're bringing it out there, and I can call the bank, said I want a loan. I said, I can go ahead and go to work. Said, then I come up there the next day or two and sign the paper.
Yeah.
Because this is the kind of thing that was moving. But you cultivated some competency in those fields. When they said you work in this area, you work in that area, the specialists were NC State has some first class specialists, and some of them, don't get me wrong, some of them were racist, but a lot of them were downright good specialists. They were not racist. I don't care if that. Now some of the black agents said they were, but I could see none of that in them, and they were just. People, if you wanted help, they provided it.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to waste time, they didn't bother you. Now, it was just that simple. But if you wanted to help, you wanted to get out there and do something, they provided everything. Anytime I would call a specialist, that would happen. I remember one call I made to Brian Driggers. He was engineering department and NC State, and I saw a magazine where a farmer could lay his own, building a hog pen, he could lay his own block, and what he could do, and it'd be 25% stronger than the conventional method. And I was talking to Driggers, I thought I had found something. I was talking, and Driggers never kept quiet. I don't care. I think if he had a gun in his face, he still couldn't keep quiet. But I was talking, and Driggers wasn't saying a word. And after a while, it occurred to me that this is a long-distance call. I'm talking to Driggers. I said, well, what do you think? He said, Phil, he said, if the conventional method is strong enough, I said, what in the hell you want 25% stronger for? And I said, now, I've been retired 20 years. I mean, that took place 10 or more years before I retired. That's a statement that more than 30 years ago. But it rang the bell.
Yeah.
And he was good. Don't get me wrong. Bynum Driggers was good. And I liked the wrestler. But he was as outspoken as anybody you could get. I could call on him. I could call on any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And in economic, Clyde Weathers, a guy in the field of economics, Charles Pugh, a lot of them,
yeah.
Dr. Pugh. I call on those fellows whenever I want, and they responded.
Right.
But you gave me a specific area of work, and the competency moved up in compared to others. I remember the first time they let, one of the early time they let us at NC State University. No, we couldn't go there first. So we were there one summer, and there was a test. You know, we were in the same class, and there was a test. And I never will call their name, but I was sitting between an NC State graduate and a Clemson graduate. When the test was given, I mean, these were guys that I teased and went on with all the time, but I could kind of sense that they didn't think I had quite what it took to do the work. they went ahead and did that. But when the paper came back, my score was higher than both of them. And you could tell then that seemingly the closeness of the three, the respect, not the closeness, the respect just built up real good. They realized then that this perception that you're black, you don't know, left. And because here you're in a classroom, your performance equal or superior to that. So it worked out real good. I've had a lot of varied experience. I've enjoyed life, married a pretty girl that went from Franklin County. She went to Edgecombe County, and then she went to Greene County. And that was too far, so I married and brought her here. And from that, there was one daughter. We named her Ina, I-N-A. Ina married, number one, my wife died in 87. Ina married just a few years ago. And in October of last year, the first grandchild was born. So I became a senior citizen my birthday last year, which when I reached 80, I became a senior citizen on my turn. And then when the first grandchild was born, I became an old man. So I'm now an old man because I have a 5-month-old grandchild. And that's her name after her grandmother, Camilla. And the nice thing about that, Ina and her husband, and told me, come out there, I want to have dinner with them. They're going to take me out to dinner. And I went there. Normally, when I go by there, we just get in the car and going out to the restaurant for dinner. But and they built a house in Union County. Okay. They're at Union County. They up in, I always said, the high rent district in the western part of the county. Two of them have more floor space on the first floor than I have on my house, and same thing on the second floor. But anyway, they didn't go then to have dinner. They sit down and talk, and they weren't talking the way they normally talk. Anna had already told me she was expecting, she was pregnant. Right. And I was elated at joy. And I think that it was by then that they learned that the baby, it was going to be a girl. Uh-huh. But they said, we were thinking that, what would you object? Then they kind of hesitated and said, would you object if we named the baby Camilla? And I looked at him a little bit for about 10 seconds. I said, that was what I was going to suggest. And that really was what I was going to suggest, you know, haphazardly, hoping that they would take it. And they were hesitant because they weren't sure that I would approve.
Yeah.
And but that the baby's name is Camilla.
When did you and your wife marry?
We married in December 54.
Okay, so shortly after you moved
here. Yeah, I came here in September and married in December.
And did you, have you always lived in town, or did you ever live?
Always lived in town.
But you had some land outside.
Yeah, I bought a little farm out there.
Yeah. And, do you still have the land?
No longer have it. But I bought a little farm out there to play with, and that's what I've done.
So you're not doing any farming now?
Nope. I quit all that after I became not a senior citizen, but a little bit older. Yeah. I did some farming until, I guess about 82 or 3.
I was wondering, as the agent, was a lot of your program, was it coming from NC State, or was it coming from, I'm sure it came from both, but to what degree was it coming from the needs of the farmers? To what degree was it coming from the state, where they're saying, you need to implement these programs, you know, this is what you need to be doing? Or is it mostly coming from the farmers who are saying, we need help on this, and this?
It was mostly from the farmer. NC State would, we would say, here's what we need. and it was some of both, of course, but the specialists had all of the research and all the in their various areas, right. And they would make certain that we were kept abreast on what was available, mm-hmm. what research, not only the research that was out there, but research that was in progress. So the farmers would let you know, working with them, what they need. And then this was coming to us from the specialists by way of NC State University, by way of the research that we have, and then we would share that with the farmers.
Okay.
And we would not just share that. If our obligation was to provide this information to the farmer and encourage his action, right. it was meaningless if we didn't get some action.
Right.
So we had to get some action, and this is what we were doing.
What kind of